Ladies and gentlemen, we got him.
What's up, you mad snakes? It's Blake and Kelly back for another episode of the Sports Medicine Project. Now, we know we've been a little bit slack with our posting lately. We missed a case study last week, and we're not actually going to be posting a topic this week. So when we started the podcast, we set a little time in the future where we thought we'll get to this point, we'll reevaluate, we'll see how many listens we've got, how many followers, if we've had anybody reach out, see how the Instagram's going, and kind of just reevaluate if we were going to continue moving forward. Now, so the good news, I hope it's good news. Well, if you listen to this, you'll be happy. We're definitely going to keep going. We've just got a couple of thousand downloads, and the Instagram's building, and we've locked in three really, like, absolute cracking guests. We've got a foot and ankle orthopedic surgeon. We've got an absolute weapon of a researcher who's going to be talking all about data science and, like, Garmin's and Whoop's and how they measure your sleep. Is it worth it? What do we do with the data? And then we've also got a sports dietitian coming on, which is going to be awesome. So, yeah, Kel, anything to add to that? No, nothing at all. You can't shake your head. People can't see that.
Put me on the spot. I hadn't prepared anything. I thought you were going to go with your little spiel.
Nah, I didn't know when I was going to stop that either. But you can't just do
it. Nah, it's been good. Emotions. It has been good.
Yeah. So thank you to everyone that's followed, giving us a 5-star review. It's been bloody awesome. So I'm doing a presentation on the foot and ankle show as well at the end of this month on pediatrics, and we're going to get a bit of a promotion there. So yeah, it's probably only going to hopefully continue to get bigger. But we just can't believe some of the people, and if you are one of the people that reached out, like, you'll know that that we both love it. Like, I know some people that'll send me a message at like 9 o'clock at night, you know, I'll send back a 15-minute voice message, all my thoughts and what the research says or what I think and how I interpret it. And yeah, it's been really good. So thank you to everyone.
Yeah, we like keeping it engaging as well. So it's nice to see that it gets you guys thinking and coming up with questions and pondering sort of what you do and why you do it. So yeah, that's really cool. We like to hear that.
Yeah, we do. And it's good for us to flesh out our thoughts. Like, I find myself now developing, and I mean, obviously I teach at the university and lecture, so I've got to kind of come up with frameworks and concepts, but I find myself doing more of them now because someone's like, oh, you know, what's your criteria for thinking about, you know, fitting in orthotic or when someone needs an injection? And it's like, oh, you need to kind of have these concepts to be able to deliver to people. Have you found that?
Definitely. I like thinking of them all the time. A lot of them are probably ones that I've adapted off things that I've already seen rather than coming up with them from scratch. But patients, I think, relate to that more than just information.
Yeah. And another thing, like, I've had four people that have seen me and then seen one of the sports docs from listening to this podcast. So it's been like someone listened to this podcast, thought someone was – and I had all this failed treatment, said, come and see Blake, then go and see the doc. And that person's actually going to end up, I'm not going to say who it is, but that person's actually going to end up with surgery, which is a good thing. Failed treatment, yeah, it was a really odd anatomical thing that one of the docs said he'd seen maybe like two in like 50 years. So, that was a really good story. So, yeah, hopefully we get plenty of those. So today's topic, I'm bloody excited, compartment syndrome, or, I mean, chronic exertional leg, oh, what is it? Chronic exertional compartment syndrome, CECS, whatever you want to call it. Now, we're talking about it in the lower leg. Kelly, what do you know about it?
Well, I believe it's something that previously was very much overdiagnosed. I haven't seen it. I've seen chronic cases of it or people that have had it in the past, but I've never diagnosed it myself. So you're going to be taking the reins for this one today.
Yeah, and the inspiration for this, like, I've had two in the last month. And again, I haven't diagnosed them. I'm about 99% confident. And the diagnostics, which we'll talk about as well, is not done by me. It's usually done by one of the sports docs. And yeah, I just can't believe it. Like, absolutely tell. And if you haven't seen one, we'll go to the, pardon me, we'll go through the symptoms that presented for me. But yeah, it's like, honestly, it's completely textbook. It's crazy. So I'll talk about the one I had this week. So, lovely person, again, trying to keep them as non-identifiable as possible. Lovely person had bilateral stress reactions in their legs kind of end of 2018, having no problems.
Tibia?
No, metatarsals. So like second and third metatarsals on both.
Had on both sides. Oh, true. You are telling me that.
Yeah. So on both sides, period of immobilization from the ortho surgeon in moon boots. Now, I can't remember. I'm sure it was bilateral moon boots coming out of the boots. And this is a real problem. I mean, it happens all the time. Wasn't given any return to anything, not recommended to see any health professional, just come out, you're young, you're healthy, you'll be fine. Ever since then, been having these issues where can do gym-based activity, squats, lunges, and feel relatively okay. If she pushes a little bit too hard with activity, it can become irritable, but not enough to stop them from doing that activity. So she...
Her calf?
Hey?
Her calf?
Yes, yeah. You just... No. So, sorry, didn't present as calf. The presenting complaint was bilateral plantar foot burning numbness. So interesting, couldn't see anything on palpate. Sorry, as I was saying before, in the gym, no worries, but as soon as we go to run 50, 100 meters, it starts and it really becomes uncomfortable and painful. And I was just asking, because, you know, you want to work out, is this is like a general concept, is it systemic or is it mechanical? So, you know, asking, you know, does it happen every single time? It's consistent. It's not affected by anything else. Every time you go to run 50 or 100 meters, it comes up. Or if you walk with the dog uphill, it starts to come on. And then if you stop, does it go away? And is the pain there the next day? And it's not. So we wake up feeling completely fine. So I'm thinking, this just doesn't sound like a tendinopathy or a bone stress, no night pain. And kind of just from the subjective, I can get a pretty good understanding.
Mm.
So... yeah, I just was thinking I need to, and I do this with anyone that reports pain with running or anything like that, you need to see them with their pain. So I was like, we're not going to jump on the treadmill to start with. I thought we can just go run in the gym floor. So I've got like a 20-meter run track with the gym, running on the gym floor, no pain, and we're kind of laughing like, oh, the one day that you come and see someone, there's no pain or discomfort. And then I thought, from the case I had a month ago, I was like, if we jump up on the treadmill, put it up to an incline within like 40 seconds.
Could it not be just like fatigue?
Bless you. I thought you were going to say like a spinal stenosis.
Like, what's differentiating just muscle fatigue compartment syndrome?
Because it's consistently every single time at the exact same amount of meters and kilometers. So
why can't that still be fatigue?
So if you had calf fatigue or capacity, you would not expect every single, if you go for 400 runs, it would be different to where you would feel
that discomfort. What makes it different with why can it be like that with compartment syndrome then?
Well, she was already in the gym as well, squatting and doing lunges and having no issues, doing strength training.
Mm.
So I would assume if she had some kind of capacity issue, it probably would have come to light in the strength training.
So my thought would be the opposite. My thought would be if it was more compartment syndrome, then it would be anything that's going to be increasing the pressure within those tissues or that muscle that's going to be bringing on those symptoms.
Yeah, so doing squats and running is completely different to the amount of load that goes through the calf.
So what's the difference then with walking uphill and running?
It just seems to be more, you need more.
Do you think walking uphill is harder than running?
It seems to be. It seems to bring on the symptoms more. In the sense of in this presentation, both presentations that I've had in the last month, walking uphill brings it on more than just running in general. So and the only thing I can think maybe like if you're in more extension, maybe like a spinal stenosis, but that wouldn't mean anything. I just think it seems to be you're asking more of the body. Walk, and again, you're not slowly walking, but I think that you're... Oh, yeah, you do. Yeah, sorry. You definitely do, because when you walk uphill, how much does your heart rate spike? Same as when you're running. Your heart rate definitely spikes a lot more when you go uphill. Would you agree? I think you're asking more of the body.
But in terms of what your calf muscle is having to do, the load going through your calf muscle, I would still argue that there's more load going through your calf muscle with running on flat than walking uphill.
let me say that out loud. There's more load going through your calf muscle running flat.
Yeah.
Than walking uphill.
Yeah.
Yeah. Yeah, I would agree with that.
So then how come it would come on with walking uphill and then not running?
Because you're demanding more blood flow, possibly. It has to be the reason. Because the muscle expands more. It has to be, because the symptom wouldn't present.
I don't know. I'm asking you.
Yeah.
It's just kind of got me thinking.
Yeah, because I know you think it's a... you think it's a calf... You think I should treat it as a calf capacity issue?
Well, I guess... But you're basing that off that
previous patient you've had.
Yeah, but my thoughts are, what's the harm in treating it as a calf capacity issue and seeing if you have an improvement before sending them to a sports doctor potentially to get some sort of injection or surgical intervention? Like, why not try conservative first?
Why not send to the doctor to rule out if it is compartment syndrome, and then if it's not, they'll send back to me?
Because then that's kind of the point of coming to a physio or a podiatrist, is to minimise that further demand onto, you know, other healthcare. Like, if you can try and get some sort of conservative effect first, then it might take away from the need to refer.
Yeah, okay.
Like, that's our role in the healthcare system, right?
Not. I don't think that is my role per se where I work.
Yeah.
I think that's possibly in the public space, but in our case, as a private practice, our role is to treat patients and get them out of pain generally, or get them back to doing what the pain's stopping them from doing. So I think that because it's an anatomical, structural thing that is going on, I don't...
How do you know that though?
That's what I think. I think that's what it is. I think it's, again, that's why I'm not 100% certain it is compartment syndrome. And luckily working with Dr. Neil Halpern, who's like vascular entrapment god in Australia, and knows everything, and he's great. Any question I have, he'll answer it really, really in depth. So been lucky enough to chat with him. And that's why I'm not saying, and I told her this is what I think it is, but it needs to be confirmed with diagnostics. And that's why I'm sending them across.
Mm-hmm.
But it's been going on. If it's been going on since 2018 and she's been strength training and she's been trying these intermittent 2018? Runs. 2018? Yeah.
Oh, far out.
So wouldn't, knowing that from a calf capacity, wouldn't you expect if she's been trying some running, she's also doing full body strength training in the gym, wouldn't you think her capacity would go up a little bit, even a tiny bit? You would think that, wouldn't you?
I don't know. I don't know what she's doing. Like, yes, you would certainly think that. But that's
why I would don't want to treat it as a calf capacity. Because you were saying, why wouldn't I? I think that
over... But has she been doing calf-specific stuff?
Yeah, and no problems. She's been doing full lower limb strengthening circuit-based, plus she's been trying some intermittent runs and hasn't improved, not even a percentage.
Yeah, okay, that makes more sense to me. I just wanted to question you because...
Yeah, I didn't even think of that.
They were just things that I was thinking of while you were saying that, and I'm assuming other people would think that too.
Yeah. Yeah, it's an odd one. Because, and the reason I wanted to talk about it as well, and from a diagnostic standpoint, is even if you don't have a treadmill in your clinic, like, you need to find a hill. I don't know if it'd be the same walking upstairs, maybe, but you need to. It was really odd, and we were saying, like, why didn't it happen?
Is this the rule of small numbers, though? Are you just basing this off the fact that you've seen two people where that's where?
Yeah, of course, my bias is swung, but I just would think. The way that it presents and the way that I understand how the condition works, I thought that doing 10 minutes of running...
Can we explain the condition?
Yeah. So now we... Full disclaimer, this is the one area where we haven't gone in to the research. We just wanted to jump on quickly and really just talk about the case. My understanding so far, and I'm sure if I... research that I could see what they think, I guess, the leading thought of. But how I understand it is the fascia that engulfs the muscle physically changes or lessens the surface area. Then when the muscle is full of blood and toxins and whatever and expands, it causes a compression between the muscle and the fascia, is what I understand, which can cause compression of other structures outside the fascia, like blood flow and nerves and things like that.
Yeah.
That's what I understand, and that's how I explain it to people.
That's my understanding of it as well.
Yeah, I just don't know if it's that easy to say it. I'm sure there's more that goes on. Anyway, so that's how I explain it. I definitely know the most common compartment is the anterior compartment, and I know for the testing, you know, you can do... Like, you know, is it the six P's, like paresthesia, loss of pulses, all that kind of thing? my diagnostics, what would you call it? My diagnostic criteria. Mm-hmm. Yeah, my criteria was no real improvement over the years. It was bilateral. We had no pain on palpation anywhere, hopping, jumping, and we couldn't reproduce the pain until we started to walk up on the treadmill. So if I said, can you jump, hop, move, do anything to try and bring the pain on? Couldn't do it. As soon as we started walking up on the treadmill on incline, it started. So the telltale sign, and I was saying, like, it's just incredible when it comes on, the calf muscles absolutely feel like concrete. Like, I know that if you guys haven't seen one and you read in the textbook, it's what does it say in the textbook? Like, the calves become taut or the skin becomes taut. Like
hypertonic almost. Yeah.
It's incredible. They just feel so full and tight. Like, if you were to dry needle them, you just think they would explode. It's incredible. So,
which you wouldn't.
Yeah. So to me, that was just like, this has to be it. But again, didn't say I'm 100% sure. I said, this is what I think. This is what it's presenting like. I'm going to send you to the sport. And she was so happy to do that because it'd been going on for so long. And yeah, just didn't really have much of an answer. Now, I could see the argument if you did treat it that way, could you train train the body so the muscle gets, yeah, and try and adapt the fascia. It kind of makes sense, but just how would you do it? Because
my thoughts would be that would be a little bit of both going on. Like, if someone,
there would be for sure.
The patient that I've got in mind who I see who's has a chronic compartment syndrome diagnosis, he had been diagnosed with compartment syndrome like 20 years ago or something like that, and at the time had been sort of steered away from doing any calf capacity work to try and get that extra blood flow or whatnot to the area. So I think over time he's lost capacity in his calves, and I think that was still something that was overdiagnosed back then. So what we've been doing is working on building his calf capacity up. And the way that we sort of explained it to him was like, okay, so maybe when you hit that zone of compartment syndrome, then that's like redlining it. But there's still this big buffer that we can get you to first before we even push into those symptoms. And because even that buffer has dropped down from where he is at the moment. So if we can try and build a bit more calf capacity up before they redline, kind of thing, then that might be an effective way to manage it over time.
So over time you would expect his fascia to change it or increase its surface area? Now I'm thinking, if you increase the efficiency of the muscle, perhaps it takes longer for it to reach that size where it would cause pain. So let's say the muscle's at 70% size. When it gets to 90%, that's when it gives you pain because the fascia is too small. So maybe if you train his calf capacity, let's say it takes from to go from 70% to 90% to get pain, it takes 20 minutes. But if you train this person's calf capacity to possibly take 40 minutes to reach the same amount of size, you haven't changed the actual surface area of the fascia. You've just increased the efficiency of the muscle so it doesn't get to that size as quick. Does that make sense?
I guess so.
I'm really trying to think. And if you guys, reach out if you think that we're missing something. But
so the other thing with this person that I have in mind is he's a very, very keen cyclist. Like, he would ride like 300 kilometres a day and he could, 300 kilometres a week, sorry. And he couldn't do more than 6 single leg calf raises. So that just doesn't make sense to me with a compartment syndrome thing, right? Like,
it was a wrong diagnosis.
Exactly. That's what I mean. I think it was a wrong over diagnosis at the time. But if you were thinking compartment syndrome, then you'd be thinking that any sort of blood flow to that area or...
But with cycling wouldn't... You're not using really much below your knee. It's more quad.
Yes, you are. Have you not seen a cyclist's calves?
Are you... But you're not pushing with your calves, are you?
You're using them, definitely.
Are you using them as much as... Because you're probably
not using them as much as you are in running,
case study me. Like, if I have sore calves, I can ride and not be affected at all. But I've got sore legs, like quads and hamstrings and glutes, I'm affected big time. Maybe I'm just not, and that's just me as an example. I've never had any. I just don't think carbs are that important, but they probably are.
I think they are.
In cycling?
Yeah.
Because even if you clip in, you're only pushing the thing that moves around. You're not actually pushing the pedal.
But you're still isometrically holding your foot in that position for hours.
No, you're more like plantar grade.
Yeah, isometric though.
Yeah, I guess because you're on the forefoot. Yeah, I just never have. I never have any. Have you ever had sore calves from riding? Ever? I've never ever heard you complain about that. But you always complain about your legs. Always. Every day. Every 10 minutes.
Whatever.
Nah. Yeah, but I've never heard you say.
Okay. Cyclists have.
That doesn't mean. Swole calves. That doesn't mean anything. That how can you? That doesn't mean anything. That is the most irrelevant statement I've ever heard in my life.
But they must be using them. They're using them.
Can they not strength train off the bike?
I'd still argue that cyclists have.
Just saw a guy that drives a Hilux. He has massive quads. Does that mean that all Hilux drivers use their quads?
Cyclists do.
That doesn't mean anything. Why could he not do calf raises off the bike?
He can. They can. They
so
do.
Then how can you be so certain that that's what
I just. I am just going out on a limb to say that cyclists have big calf muscles.
All right. Okay. I don't have big calves. Mine are smaller.
Yeah, because you don't cycle much.
I cycle heaps. No, you don't have big calves either, and you cycle heaps. The people from the triathlon club, no one in our cycling group has big calves, and they all cycle.
Yeah, because they're triathlons. They're not cyclists.
But it's still cycling. Who do you know? Name one cyclist that we know that's got big calves.
My patient.
No. I want to see pics. Yeah. Anyway.
Off topic.
Yeah,
sorry, guys.
I definitely can see calves being used. I don't remember what we're talking about. So
what's the management for compartment syndrome anyways?
Ah, that's right. Yeah. So, and again, this is not what I'm going to be doing. I know from a diagnostics it needs an ABI and then it also an ABI, ankle brachial index. It's like when you look at the pulses. Pulse. Yeah. It also needs to be confirmed with pressure testing. So, and I've watched a couple of these happen, which is, and I'm sure they still do it the same, and I know that everybody does it different, and I know the doctor that I work with is trying to change pressure testing and how it is done to make it more reliable and valid, which is great.
But less invasive?
No, just more reliable because the testing's not great.
And it's invasive?
Yeah. No, because there's no other way to. I don't think you can test the pressure without going into the compartment.
But it is invasive, though.
Yeah, but I think it has to be. How else can
I
you
don't
test?
Know.
I don't think there's anything else you can use to test the pressure. Maybe. So, at this stage, it's a local where you're going to do the injection, which is generally you're going to do the injection into all four compartments and look at the pressure. So you do a local first, and then you do this big. It's a pretty big needle, but it gives you basically a comparison between all four compartments. And I can't remember the actual, I think it's like something over 28, I know it's a random number, is indicative of compartment syndrome. But it's interesting to see it happen, and that's what they use to confirm. So it could be, you know, it doesn't always have to be popliteal entrapment, but it can be like another vascular entrapment.
As a differential, do you mean?
Yeah, yeah. So it's not all, and again, that's why I say it. I'm not telling you that this is 100% chronic exertional compartment syndrome, but I'm very likely thinking it is. It could be something else.
Some and that's, sort of vascular condition almost.
Yeah, vascular entrapment. But I just know, and this is from the doc saying, they've seen people have fasciotomies and things like that, and they're not getting any improvement. So once confirmed, you know, treatment can vary. I know, and I've heard Botox has been successful. I'm not sure of the mechanism.
Compartment syndrome?
Yeah, I'm not sure of the mechanism. And the other one is a fasciotomy, which is probably the most common.
And very invasive.
Yeah, very invasive. But you can choose the level of invasiveness. So it doesn't have to be a complete fasciotomy all the way down the muscle. I'm almost certain it can be, you know, maybe 1-3 centimeter split or slit within the fascia. Yeah, I'm unsure. And I'm unsure how, if that then, obviously it would change the surface area, but does the muscle come in? Like, do you then, once you use the muscle, does that then, through adaption, change the size of it?
Oh, yeah.
I don't know.
See, it's interesting, isn't it? So yeah. is there any research that you can do conservative management for it, or does it do anything?
Not that I know of. I mean, the long-term surgical, like, success is roughly around 33%, and around 73% of people resume like their normal sporting activities. And I mean, in the from an evidence-based standpoint, it's identified as a successful long-term treatment. Mm-hmm. But yeah, other than that, like the risk factors,
Botox kind of makes sense to me, I guess.
Age, gender, previous lowering pathology, sports. How does that work?
I don't know. It just makes sense in my brain for some reason as to why it would be helpful in managing symptoms. But then also, it doesn't last for very long. So then theoretically, it would just come back.
Yeah. Is it enough time to then cause the adaptation in the tissue? I don't know. I don't even know how it works. Yeah. I don't want to make a statement because I don't know enough about it. But yeah.
So Botox basically weakens a muscle. It turns like a hypertonic muscle, hypotonic, is what it does.
Okay.
So that would make sense, I guess, if it's compartment syndrome where that muscle is becoming very hypertonic with that extra blood flow and pressure there, then Botox could be effective to reduce that. But I
wonder how that affects your daily function.
Yeah, exactly.
Yeah, I don't know. And I didn't ask too much about it. But, you know, just for you guys, definitely, I don't really think you can miss it. And I mean, even if you did miss it, like after a couple of weeks, it's not going to be responding to general strength and conditioning, especially like maybe like Kelly was saying, in the long term, you know, if you increase that capacity, it might, but especially in the first few weeks, I wouldn't expect it to. And it's a pretty telltale one to see. Like the symptoms are pretty clear. So yeah,
great. Just something different to think about when you're seeing those lower leg issues that don't match a clear-cut presentation, another one to think about.
And a great
about.
Referral to build some relationships too with, you know, GPs or docs around. So, yeah, that'll do us. Compartment syndrome, don't miss it. Pretty easy symptoms. And, yeah, see what you guys think. I mean, my bias is to refer to the docs because I work with them. But, you know, maybe it is best to focus on the car capacity like Kelly was saying. So make sure to leave us a 5-star review on Spotify, give us a follow on Apple Podcasts, and give us a follow on the Instagram as well. We're starting to put some more content out there. You got anything to say, Kel, before we part ways?
Mm-mm.
Lovely.
Yeah, you put me on the spot again.
Again. All right, guys, see you all next week.